I am Joel Cookson, and I'm happy you've decided to spend a little time with us today. We're going to start things off with a conversation, a little bit of a different conversation. We have a friend of mine, Dr. Elizabeth Mattern, who is a psychiatrist. We're going to talk to her about mental health issues for high school students, high school student athletes. Thought it would be an interesting perspective. Feel like this is a topic that's kind of in the mainstream more and more in today's world, and thought it would be interesting to get an expert's perspective on it and some of the things she sees and deals with. And hopefully it's a topic that might be relevant and might be helpful for some of our listeners, whether they're coaches, athletes, parents, anyone sort of trying to navigate some tricky issues around the world of mental health. Dr. Mattern, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
Dr. Mattern, I'm going to run through your credentials here just to embarrass you as much as possible, but she is triple board certified with a subspecialty in child and adolescent psychiatry. So she is, that's what made me want to reach out to her, along with the fact that she's one of the nicest people I know. So thank you for agreeing to chat with me and talk about some of these things.
That is very kind of you. Thanks for having me.
All right, so I've got some questions here that we want to go through, and like I said, this is sort of a different topic for my podcast. Usually we're very sports specific, but I feel like this conversation around mental health challenges and issues has become more and more prevalent, and certainly is one that's relevant for high school students and high school athletes. So I'm curious, what are some of the unique mental health challenges that you find are kind of specific to high school students that maybe folks could be aware of?
It's important for us to remember that what's going on in childhood development is a whole lot of normal growth and change.
Mm-hmm.
When we are born, one of the things I tell kids is when you are born, you don't know how to do a lot of things. You don't pay attention very well. You get much better at paying attention as you get older. That's because that system is developing. When you are born, you don't know how to ride a bike. You don't even have the ability to do that. You're not coordinated enough.
Mm-hmm.
You get better and better at that as you grow older. And so one of the things that we always want to think about when any person is experiencing symptoms, and a symptom is something that causes you distress, we want to think about, okay, well, why now? What's going on in your normal development, and why might this be something that would affect you?
Right.
And so for high school students, they are going through all of this course of normal development, and one of the things I will tell them is I want them to know that the brain is the most important part of their body. It's incredibly unique. It's what makes you you. And so when we talk about the brain from person to person, it's not quite the same as talking about a broken bone,
right,
or a stomach.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole lot more individualized. That being said, there are certain things that I want your brain to be able to do. I want you to worry sometimes, for example. I want you to worry when you go to cross the street. I want that little worry switch to go on and say, gee, I really don't want to get hit by a car right now.
Yeah.
So that you look both ways. And then you cross the street safely. This is evolution. This is a good thing that our brain does. I don't ever want that worry switch to sort of, I think of it usually like a dimmer switch for a light switch. And it can turn up higher or it can turn down lower. And I don't ever want it to be turning up too high or down too low at the wrong times. In other words, I don't want you to be so worried that you don't cross the street at all. And I don't want you to not worry to the point that you just walk into traffic,
mm-hmm,
because that's not helpful either.
Right.
And so what is tough about being an adolescent is that you're still figuring out kind of what is an appropriate level of feeling about different things, because all of these things are new experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And so what adolescents don't always realize is what's normal or typical and what's not. For example, if you are a kid who has social anxiety and being around other people makes you a little bit uncomfortable, it's important for you to know, is this a symptom or is this part of who I am? I used to work with a kid years and years ago who said, I just don't like people. And I said, okay, well, the thing is this is what I know about you. It's lunchtime at your high school. It's very busy and there's lots of people around. So you wait until there's pretty much nobody left in the cafeteria. And if the lunch lady is there still and she is still selling food, you go in and you buy something to eat and you eat lunch.
Mm-hmm.
If it hasn't cleared out, then you just don't eat lunch. When we get to a point where you eat lunch when you're hungry and you don't eat lunch when you're not hungry, and then you tell me I still don't like being around people, I will say, okay, maybe you're just a guy who doesn't like to be around people.
Yeah.
But right now it sounds to me like your anxiety, your worry switch, is turned up a little bit too high, and it's making decisions for you.
Mm-hmm.
What I want high school students to know and to have a good sense of is what's really me and what's sort of a symptom that might be getting in my way.
Yeah.
Because I want them to be able to make good decisions for themselves.
No question.
And so when it comes to any of these types of things, I think the biggest challenge for adolescents is they're at a time of figuring out who they are and who they want to be. And there can be some discrepancies.
Mm-hmm.
That's also true of that switch that tells us whether or not we did a good job or whether or not we feel good. Sometimes when we have a switch that kind of tells us, you know, am I happy or am I sad? Or should I feel bad about something? It's important for us to have those switches. I always tell kids that if we think about how our body and our brain was designed, way back a long time ago when we were cave people, if you ate the last Bronto burger and the chief wanted it, you needed to feel bad about that so that you apologized to the chief and brought him a nice, you know, fur or something.
Right.
So that he didn't kick you out of the village. That was important.
Yeah.
If you didn't learn that, you were going to be on your own. And so that doesn't mean that we want you to feel bad every time you eat.
Mm-hmm.
And what can happen with that switch is sometimes we don't always know the difference. And for adolescents in particular, they're still kind of figuring things out. It can be very difficult for them to know what's a symptom and what's just part of who I am.
Yeah. No, that's a lot to process for adults and certainly for kids, as you say, who are still kind of discovering who they are and what's typical. It's a big challenge. So,
absolutely.
You know, obviously, you know, you and I have talked about this off air, so to speak, but I know that, you know, obviously our organization is one that promotes student involvement and student activities, whether that's sports or whether it's music or debate or whatever it might be, and being involved in a lot of things. But I know, you know, there's certainly concerns that perhaps, you know, that kids are doing too much at times. And I'm just curious, you know, what kind of issues have you seen that may arise as sort of a result of involvement in too much or in just over schedule or over involvement for high school students?
Well, I think it's important for us to recognize that all of us are very overstimulated at this point in our society, based on how much things have changed. It's an example that I can give is just the advent of cell phones.
Mm-hmm.
I was speaking with a girl the other day, and she had had a panic attack at school, and she went into the bathroom, and she texted her mom at work. And her mom got the text, and her mom is at work, and she's trying to balance getting this text, and what should we do, and should I come pick you up? And all of that is something that would not have been possible when us as adults were growing up.
Right.
We would have sort of had to figure that out on our own.
Yeah.
What happens now with kids being in so many structured activities and also having so much access to adults all the time is that they're not always doing so well at realizing that they are capable of solving their own problems.
Mm-hmm.
And because we're the adults who care about them, and when we see them in distress, our immediate thought is, how can I make this better for you?
Yeah.
And so what happens is that kids are not having a lot of time where they're on their own and really have no access to adults and have to figure these things out on their own. And so when they are in a position where they have to figure something out on their own, they have a little bit less practice.
Yeah.
When it comes to having structured activities, that's not to say at all that that's a bad thing. I think what we want to make sure we do is that we're sensitive to the fact that kids don't have a lot of time where they are just having these interactions with one another where they have to kind of wing it and problem solve. And so while the adults are here, whether it be the coaches or the facilitators or what have you, that we sort of remind ourselves to take a step back and show the kids that we have confidence in you. You can figure this out. You can come to your own conclusions. You can solve your own disputes.
Yeah.
Not only that, we want to recognize the amount of time that kids are engaged in some kind of purposeful activity, whether it be on a team or whether it be in some kind of club or group or even just all of the classes that they have.
Mm-hmm.
And during that time, they are constantly flooded with information, whether it be a text, whether they're online doing their homework, but there's ads and pop-ups and things all over the place.
Yeah.
That's a lot for our brains to process all the time. All of us need some downtime. We just need some time where we kind of have some quiet or have some peace to just sort of be in our own skin and process the whole day and figure things out.
Yeah.
I think both of those things are big challenges for kids now because they really, you know, if I think about when I was growing up, the phone rarely rang after 9 o'clock. That was considered rude.
Yeah.
Now telemarketers call us at 10:30.
Yeah. That's actually just me calling your house. I don't know if I told you that.
That's just Joel.
Just checking in. Just checking in. Sorry. Go ahead.
Would you like to donate to whatever cause?
Exactly.
And so all of these things are things that I think about with kids that they really they don't have a lot of time where they're just kind of hanging out, so to speak. What's great about their activities, though, is that it does give them other opportunities to really explore what might I like to be? What am I good at?
Mm-hmm.
And there are so many opportunities for kids to explore talents and creative ideas and leadership in ways that weren't possible for kids that when in earlier generations. And
yeah.
So there's always a balance of good and potentially problematic that we just have to navigate and manage the best we can.
Yeah, no question. There's certainly, and obviously, as I said, our organization, promotes these things and is very high on the benefits of them. But keeping an eye on the potential downsides is certainly necessary and part of the reason that I wanted to have this conversation with you. So,
on that end, one thing that I have noticed with a lot of parents and a lot of adults when I speak is that one thing that we don't recognize is that kids don't have as much practice in tolerating distress as mm-hmm. many of us did when we were young.
Yeah.
And so when even just an example, like if you had a panic attack or if you were upset about a test, you couldn't text your mom. It just wasn't an option. It just wasn't there.
Yeah.
And so you had to find a way to feel better. A lot of adults will find themselves very frustrated with the younger generation because they can be very affected by some of these types of problems. And I think what we have to recognize is not that they're weak or not that they're, overreacting or any of those things, but they really don't have a lot of practice in processing these things on their own.
Yeah.
And so little things that we can do sometimes, and coaches can be an excellent model for this, is kind of, okay, well, if I wasn't here, what would you do?
Yeah.
How would you solve this problem? How would you handle this? I frequently tell people that that's not that dissimilar from when you are learning how to be a doctor. When you are a young doctor in the hospital, you have senior people above you. And if they're standing right there next to you, it's really easy to just say, hey, what do I do? How do
yeah.
I do this? I had a senior resident when I was a young intern who often left me to my own devices. And I realized I could page her, but maybe I can figure this out on my own. And then I did, and it made me a better doctor.
Yeah.
Sometimes as adults, we feel like we're abandoning our kids, but I want us to reframe that in our own minds of, actually, what I want you to know is that I'm showing confidence in you. And I want you to learn to have confidence in yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. It's interesting. You talk about the coaching and you know, it's obviously we hear a lot, you know, coaching a new sort of generation of kids has different challenges than previous generations may have. And that certainly seems like some good advice there. Without getting too specific, I'm just curious, what are, you know, some of the issues that you find that you deal with the most, you know, when it comes to adolescents and mental health challenges? You know, what are some of the typical, or I guess most typical kinds of things that you're seeing in terms of challenges that maybe kids are facing these days?
Mm-hmm. One of the biggest ones is attention problems. ADHD, there's a lot of talk about why is ADHD being diagnosed so often now?
Mm-hmm.
What it is really is not that we are over-diagnosing or that it's more prevalent now than it ever was, but that attention problems are actually really along a spectrum where you can have a small, you know, mild attention problem or you can have a very severe attention problem.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to attention is the most important thing in our brain that helps us with executive functioning. Executive functioning is anything that your brain needs to do in order to execute something. Execution is playing sports. Execution is writing an essay. Execution is me putting my coffee cup down on the table and then picking up my keys and going and unlocking a door.
Yeah.
We need attention to help us to do those things. Your brain has to focus on, what am I in the process of doing? What do I need to do next? How do I plan and organize that in my head? What happens is that the more we have to pay attention to, the harder it is for us to do it.
Yeah.
And as we talked about a little bit with the world being much more stimulating in general, we have a lot more that we are asking kids to pay attention to. When I was in kindergarten, I had a half day of kindergarten. We colored the letter A, we had apple slices, we probably even took a nap.
Mm-hmm.
Now in kindergarten, they have a full day, they have 20 minutes of recess, they start reading and writing right away in kindergarten,
mm-hmm.
they have 20 minutes of Spanish a day, they are writing essays, and I always laugh because our kids had to write persuasion essays last year. They had to send home a letter in kindergarten, persuading their parents to do something.
Right.
And so that's a much higher level of attention than was ever required of us before at such a young age.
Yeah.
That is not to say that our kids are not capable of it. But what I always let folks know is that attention, no baby pays attention well. And everyone gets better and better and better at it until they're about 25.
Yeah.
And that goes along with our ability to execute. A toddler, you might give those puzzles that have one big piece that go in.
Yeah.
And then a five-year-old, you might give a 20-piece puzzle. And a 10-year-old, you might give a 300-piece puzzle. And a teenager can do a 1,000-piece puzzle. We get more and more able to handle more complexity and pay attention to those things. But if you're a kid with an attention problem, and now you're a smart kid and you were able to compensate really well all through young grades, but now you're taking 5 AP classes and you're doing a sport after school and you're in the scouts and you're also in a STEM club.
Mm-hmm.
That's a whole lot of stuff for your brain to pay attention to, and it's going to be a lot harder to execute all of those things. And so what people are finding is that, yes, I think our rates of, and actually this is shown in the research, that our prevalence rates, the amount of people being diagnosed right now with ADHD, is higher. But that's not to say that those were folks that wouldn't have been qualified for that diagnosis in the past. We're seeing the result of it more often because we're asking more of everyone.
Yeah.
That's not such a horrible thing.
Yeah.
It sounds like a horrible thing. But what we want to recognize is that our brains all have their unique challenges. What I tell folks about ADHD is that your attention cells are like a big grid of spotlights. And if you think about a football game, you have this big, huge grid of spotlights, and they're shining down on the football field. And they should be shining together. if you're a person with an attention problem, you have some attention cells or some spotlights that start to go rogue.
Mm-hmm.
And they're looking around. And so you're sitting in the stands, and one of your attention cells is like, I smell popcorn. Is that popcorn over there? And then you see something else over in the stands, like, oh, is that one of my friends? And you're being kind of taken in different directions. Back in the caveman days, if everyone was paying attention to something in the center, like rock football, whatever they played back then,
mm-hmm.
and everyone else was focused on that, but you were, your attention was sort of being drawn around and distracted, you were the only one who saw the saber-toothed tiger coming. And you warned the whole village, and you were a hero. People with attention problems often are the ones to think outside of the box,
mm-hmm.
to have different creative ideas. And so they simply have different strengths and different weaknesses. And we don't always recognize how to maximize that instead of thinking of it simply as a weakness.
Yeah.
That segues also, and I'm sorry I talk so much.
That's okay. This is why I called you.
That segues into, if we have certain expectations of folks, and we are in a society that every day has kind of higher and higher expectations of everyone, that you may start to have secondary anxiety or depressive symptoms. If you're a person with an attention problem and you tend to overlook details, you may worry, oh, I'm going to get a bad grade on my math test because I forgot to carry the X, or I forgot to use the negative sign, or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
Or it may be hard for you to sustain your attention on longer assignments. And so you start to struggle, and you start to not be able to keep up with your homework assignments, and you start to feel like you're just not as smart as the other kids. Those are what we call sort of secondary depressive or anxiety symptoms, where a lot of your symptoms are stemming from problems that come from another primary source. In other words, if we were able to help you with your attention problem, the things that you worry about as a result of your attention problem would not be an issue.
Mm-hmm.
The other major things that we run into in adolescence are anxiety and depression.
Mm-hmm.
Any person that is susceptible to any kind of illness, whether it be a medical illness or a physical illness, or a mental health issue, we are more likely to experience symptoms when we are under stress. Stress can be physical, like going through puberty. So I frequently see first episodes of anxiety or depression during puberty because the body is under an incredible amount of physical stress and growth and mm-hmm. hormones. I will frequently see things when kids get run into some other kind of stressor, whether it be their family going through a major change like a divorce, or maybe they have mono and their body is under a lot of stress. Or maybe it's just a whole lot of tiny stressors added up. When it comes to things like anxiety and depression, we need to remember that there's a large genetic component to this, that it's really no one's fault.
Mm-hmm.
There are things that we have control over, and there are things that we don't. So, for example, I always use the example of my mother having high cholesterol. Some folks have high cholesterol, and they go to their doctor, and their doctor says, okay, we want you to get up off the couch and get some exercise. We want you to not have any more fried food. We want you to, you know, eat a better diet. A lot of folks will then go back to the doctor, making those lifestyle changes, and their cholesterol will go down.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's folks like my mom, who takes really good care of herself, doesn't eat any of the stuff she's not supposed to eat, doesn't have shrimp. Shrimp has a lot of cholesterol. But her cholesterol is really high because so was Aunt Gladys and Uncle Bert and everyone else who had cholesterol in her family, and that's just luck of the draw.
Yeah.
And so for her, she needs some medication to help her cholesterol go down. For mental health, it's the same type of process, where there's usually a couple of different components. One is genetic. Is it something that runs in your family, and how strongly does it run in your family?
Mm-hmm.
And another is, for example, how am I talking to myself? If I flunk a test and I tell myself, I'm so stupid, I'm the dumbest person on earth, I never should have even tried to take this class, that was such a dumb idea. Well, you're not making yourself feel a whole lot better.
Yeah.
That's not good exercise. And so those are the types of things that we work on in therapy. How am I handling problems? How am I learning how to talk to myself? But sometimes if the problem is very significant or very genetically based, we can try all of the right things, all of the diet and exercise, but that's not going to fit the bill.
Mm-hmm.
And with every person, that's going to be a little bit different.
Yeah. We've talked a lot, you know, and I sort of have said, you know, feel like the conversation around these issues is becoming more public. And then I've got a question about that in a little bit. But I'm curious, you know, and you'll see sort of this, I feel like you sort of see this idea that, you know, maybe people who aren't struggling with mental health issues or challenges, you know, they want to be able to help. So I guess I'm curious, you know, from your perspective, what are, you know, some signs that peers or coaches or parents can look for to suggest that someone may be struggling with some challenges? And sort of following that, how can they help? What would you sort of recommend as sort of first steps maybe in those sorts of situations?
Sure. One thing that we want to do is sort of never take for granted that anyone is fine. And I think our schools and our communities have really been trying to foster more of a supportive environment, more of a positive mantra of kind of, you know, kindness mm-hmm. and support one another and, you know, fostering that kind of environment where it's okay to talk about things.
Yeah.
We also are changing in that as a society, we are starting to talk about these issues more and more often. And so what that tells kids is that it's okay if you're experiencing these kinds of things. It's okay for us to talk about it. It shouldn't be something that is considered a fault or a blame.
Mm-hmm.
And back when a lot of us were growing up, that was definitely the case. We did not understand the brain nearly as well as we do now. And we still have a long way to go because as opposed to other parts of the body, let's say a broken bone, we can do an x-ray, we can do surgery, we can look at the broken parts, we can put screws in, we can fix that and it's very concrete.
Mm-hmm.
The brain is so microscopic in terms of the processes that we're looking at and that we're thinking at, that it's hard for people to understand the differences because it's not so obvious.
Yeah.
In terms of us supporting one another and supporting our students and our coaches, one thing that we want to do is sort of recognize that we can be role models in talking about these things. And recognizing also that this isn't just an issue for kids.
Mm-hmm.
Suicide rates have risen in every age group, in every demographic, every ethnicity, every sort of breakdown that you can think of
mm-hmm.
across America. Stress levels are higher for many families, whether it be financial, whether it be in our communities, whether it be that a hurricane has devastated your community. And so we are seeing much larger levels of stress and of difficulties across our communities.
Mm-hmm.
And it is not only in our teenagers or in our kids. And so the more that we can all together as adults even start to talk about this and how it affects us as adults, the better we can understand how to help our kids deal with all of these problems.
Yeah.
The major thing from a practical standpoint that we can do for our kids is to be supportive. All of our kids want to be good kids. They really do. Every kid gets up every day, and none of them are like, I'm going to be a bad guy today. That's just not really how kids are wired.
Mm-hmm.
And what we want to remember is that every kid every day is really just trying to do their best. And sometimes they just don't know how to go about it. So the best we can do is be supportive and remind kids, I know you're trying your best. I know you want to have a good day today and that I'm here for you.
Yeah, no, that's it's certainly taking to heart and hopefully something that is valuable advice for those listening in. So you've been very, very kind with your time. I know you're very busy. I'll let you sort of end with hopefully maybe an optimistic question. But, you know, you talked about all the challenges both for adults and for adolescents, for kids. I guess my question is, you know, do you feel, and this is sort of anecdotal, I know, but do you feel like we are doing better around these topics, whether it's, you know, those supportive environments in school or increased conversation? Do you feel like we are making progress and maybe how do we continue to make progress if that's the case?
We're definitely making progress in terms of recognizing that these are challenges that people face it's funny because a lot of parents are taken off guard. I spoke with a mom a while back who was like, you know, I found my daughter in elementary school, and she's on the playground, and she and her friends are talking about which medicine they take and what color it is, and, oh, I take this one, and you take that one. And they were kids who, you know, were going through some attention problems or were, you know, dealing with some other things. And the mom was kind of horrified in a way, and I said, well, we also want the kids to recognize that if I have a problem, I can solve it. You know, if there's something that, if I had diabetes, I wouldn't feel bad about taking my insulin.
Yeah.
And so we want to recognize that what we're really doing is taking care of symptoms. And I think as a society, we're starting to really understand why we do the things that we do. Kids are, in some ways, leading the way of being able to talk to each other about these things. And some of my biggest proponents in my office for kids are their parents who say, I experienced symptoms like this when I was a kid, and it was awful, and no one helped me.
Yeah.
And now I see my son or my daughter going through it, and I really want to make sure that they don't deal with what I had to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
We can make that a broader topic to even say, we don't just have to talk about that in my office. We can talk about that as a society, that we can do better for our kids than we had to deal with.
Yeah.
People pay attention to our children and help them grow up is really part of that whole thing where it takes a village.
Mm-hmm.
There's more parents working, and, you know, the more my kids get older and I see that there are these coaches who take the time to invest in our kids and look at them and say, hey, you're an important person, that really helps our kids feel like I matter. You know, there's mm-hmm. people who bother to take this time with me and listen to what I have to say and help me get good at something.
Yeah.
And it's really mainly volunteer.
Yeah.
You know, it's not my teacher who gets paid for this or that, but it's this neighbor down the street or my friend's dad who teaches me how to bat, who
yep.
teaches me how to throw. And that is so invaluable for the development of our kids to feel like important people in the world. I think on a global scale, we are doing that. What worries me and what is something that parents should keep in mind is that the media is a mixed bag.
Mm-hmm.
And while there are a lot of excellent websites out there that give a lot of really good information, there are also others that really promote the opposite. I will have parents come in and they have been exposed to information that was definitely false
mm-hmm.
and sort of scared them away from seeking treatment either for themselves or for their children.
Yeah.
And so on a broader topic, one of the things that we're trying to teach our kids is what's a good source of information and what isn't.
Sure.
And it's important as adults that we recognize that as well, that you can't just Google things and be sure that that's accurate information. You want to make sure that you are getting things from the appropriate sites.
Yeah.
Sometimes patients will report things, and because they're not doctors, they may say, well, I experienced this, and it was due to my depression, or mm-hmm. I experienced this, and it was due to my anxiety medication. But then you have more information, and you realize that person had another condition as well, or was taking another medication as well, and unbeknownst to them, that was what was causing the problem.
Yeah.
And so we get some dissemination of misinformation that can really affect whether or not people get the care that they need. And
yeah.
and vice versa, we also have things out there that can really encourage people to talk to the right people. So making sure that we are always talking to one another about what good sources of information are and teaching our kids where to find that information is important as well.
Yeah, no question. Well, hopefully conversations like this one and the ones that, you know, that we're seeing more and more in the public sphere and as you say, in our schools can continue to help our kids. Dr. Mattern, I am very, very grateful. I know for our listeners, this is a little different conversation and different topic. We'll get back with her to break down the Red Sox postseason chances and how excited her family is about that on our next phone call. But for this one, we are so grateful, Dr. Mattern. Thank you for your time and all your information and insight. It's greatly appreciated.
Well, and it's greatly appreciated to know that there's organizations like yours that are thinking about the welfare of our kids and also paying attention to this topic. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much to Dr. Mattern. She's a wonderful person, wonderful physician, a good friend, and hopefully that was a conversation that folks found illuminating and helpful and informational. So we I know it's a little bit off the beaten path for us here on the CIIC cast, but thought with the issues certainly in the forefront and being talked about more as we talked about in that conversation, but thought it was one that might be worthwhile and helpful, certainly a critically important topic in the world of high school and high school sports and beyond. Hope you enjoyed that, and thanks, great thanks to Dr. Mattern for taking a few minutes to chat with us.